Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, March 10th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Representative Redman of Coeur d'Alene introduces bill to repeal Medicaid expansion. Idaho Senate Education Committee stops Representative Dale Hawkins' censorship bill banning teaching anything about sexual orientation or gender identity in K-12 schools. Drug Enforcement Administration makes largest drug bust ever east of the Cascades in Washington. Well, details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Senate Education Committee yesterday voted to hold a bill that would have enacted a total ban on teaching about gender identity and sexual orientation in K-12 schools. The original bill that passed last year started as a ban on teaching about gender identity and sexual orientation in grades kindergarten through three and included a number of things schools would need parental consent for in order to teach about or do. The sponsor of last year's bill, Republican Representative Dale Hawkins of Fernwood, changed the language to include grades K-12. And that wording allowed for age-appropriate teaching as well, but there was a caveat. Governor Brad Little signed last year's bill into law. Hawkins' new bill has already passed the House. An associate of Representative Hawkins, Doug Taylor, a conservative lobbyist, made the presentation before the Senate Education Committee yesterday.
The original language, when it was K-3, it included the qualifier, quote, or in a manner that is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate. So that was in the original language. When we changed it, we didn't remove that language. We felt that language was a little bit confusing after the fact. And I'll note, this was really late in the session. I think it was March 25th that it passed the Senate. And at the time, I remember Chairman Hawkins saying, hey, I think we should have taken that language out, but where we were in the session, it was quite late. We debated the original policy, which is a public school shall be required to adopt procedures and policies that prohibit classroom instruction by public school personnel on sexual orientation or gender identity from kindergarten through 12. That's what was changed last year to what was passed, but then we left in or in a manner that is not age appropriate. We don't believe that phrase and anything after is necessary because it's K-12, it's absolute. So there's no age appropriate in terms of K-12. If it was K-3, you would have leave some judgment as to, you know, eighth graders, if is this age appropriate or not.
Republican Senator Kevin Cook of Idaho Falls said he was concerned that Hawkins' bill would also eliminate sex ed that addresses heterosexual orientation. Here's Cook in an exchange with Representative Hawkins.
I think I understand what you're trying to do here, and I support the idea. But I am concerned, as I read that here, that it would do away with that awkward fifth grade movie that I remember watching with my mother. I don't see how you could do that again in fifth grade with based on what you've got here. Can you talk to that to me a little bit? Because we talked in that fifth grade movie years and years ago about what a boy was, about what a girl was. That is gender identity.
Representative Hawkins.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cook, I'm trying to find the right way. Like this bill, biology class, what is a girl, what is a boy? You used to see the images on the wall. That is not what we're talking about here. Sexual orientation and gender identity are theories of thought that go outside the normal bounds of biology. I guess somebody brought up a better way to explain it is, nobody's ever been on the farm ground and a cow come up to you and tell you that it's a bull. These are the things that we're talking about here. sexual orientation and gender identity is different than normal biology.
Follow up.
Again, I see what you're trying to say, and I agree with where you're trying to go. But as I read this, it's the words that become the legal law. And as I read this, sexual orientation, you have homosexuals and you have heterosexuals. I want my kids to learn about heterosexual. And as I read this, that's not going to happen if this passes.
Most of the testimony in the Senate Education Committee was against Hawkins' bill. Here's some of that, starting with Idaho League of Women Voters President Jean Henscheid.
I spent most of 30 years in education teaching students who had just graduated from high school. I've studied them as they enter the perplexing world of life beyond high school. U of I students, not my alma mater, were my favorite, although they were also some of the most heartbreaking. Many of my U of I students came from places like my hometown, Blackfoot. They meet people vastly different from themselves. Succeeding in post-secondary education requires confidence of convictions and a willingness to adapt to people not from around here. Students who typically fail in their first year are angered when they realize not everyone shares their value system. They seek homogeneity in their friend group, but fold at the first disagreement. Students who fear speaking to their instructor because he's, quote, weird, or decide there's no one there like them, with a narrow definition of what that means, all too often will leave by Christmas or in the spring. I can predict it the day after Thanksgiving break. Whether you believe gender identity is not a spectrum and that non-heterosexuality is a lie or a mental illness, your children and grandchildren will meet or even be these people. Whether it is how you educate them as a parent, or if a teacher includes an age-appropriate discussion of these subjects in class, students who succeed beyond high school are not blindsided by difference. You have taught them your value system and the resilience to hold true to it when they encounter someone strange. House Bill 516 is not a cleanup bill. It is a scrub difference away bill. Please vote no and vote yes for our Idaho high school seniors.
My name is Scaruline. I am a concerned citizen of Twin Falls, and I strongly oppose. Under current law, parents can opt their child into age-appropriate instruction that includes sexual orientation or gender identity. But HB 516 would remove that option entirely. I oppose this as someone who spent their entire K-12 education in the Idaho public school system and just so happens to be LGBT. I spent the majority of my public school education as an openly LGBT person, and I spent the last 2 years of high school transitioning. I couldn't hide from my identity, and I didn't want to. Let's not mince words. This bill treats high school seniors like kindergartners. It says that they cannot possibly learn about LGBT people because it's inappropriate. Straight cis high school students are interacting with LGBT high school students every day of their lives, and erasing education about these identities won't stop that. When I was in high school, I remember being given open-ended assignments that let students learn about topics they were passionate about. One of these assignments was the Decades Project, which allowed students to pick a decade to present on. I chose the 60s, and with that, I chose to teach my class about the Stonewall Riots, a series of riots where LGBT pupils stood up against government-sponsored persecution of LGBT identities. I wouldn't have been able to do that if this bill were in effect then. It makes me think about all we will lose by not allowing this kind of comprehensive historical analysis in our schools. A student covering the 2010s wouldn't be able to talk about the Obergefell v. Hodges case. A student covering the 90s wouldn't be able to talk about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell military policy. A student covering the 80s wouldn't be able to talk about the AIDS epidemic. These aren't just massive moments in LGBT history. They are massive moments in American history, and they can't be divorced from their LGBT context. Public schooling should be about teaching students to love learning, to follow their passions, and to make the most out of their time in K-12. This bill places obstacles in the way of those goals.
My name is Nissa Nagel. I am here on behalf of myself. As a parent of a teenager, I am against HB 516. Our families and our classrooms include a whole range of human biology, temperaments, and traits, including a variety of sexual orientations and gender identities. There is no abnormal or normal. There just are. All of our children deserve the opportunity to learn lessons that they can relate to be able to see themselves as part of their community. The way this bill reads, it would likely impact English, history, civics, science. Would students be allowed to choose prominent figures such as former Secretary of Transportation Peter Buttigieg or artist Frida Kahlo for their book reports? What about a history paper about Stonewall? In a speech class, would a student's speech about Olympian Johnny Weir be suddenly stopped if they mentioned that he's gay? Our children benefit from access to honest and comprehensive information about sex, reproduction, and healthy relationships, especially our high schools, and also our queer children. Removing content that acknowledges the breadth of sexuality and gender fails to do that. This bill treats all ages K through 12 the same. Teenagers need honest and complete information to protect themselves from unwanted pregnancies and sexually transmitted infections. As a parent, I believe it is my right to opt my child into the lessons that teach them this, that are provided by the school in their curriculum. I am not allowed to make that choice if this bill passes. Instead, that choice is moved to the legislature. And after listening to the sponsor, I do not trust him to make that decision for my child. If the concern is truly about parental rights, then why propose a bill that denies me my rights?
My name is Jeffrey Watkins, and I live in District 16. I'm speaking against House Bill 516. 1 year ago, I argued against House Bill 352, which added this item 5 to this section of Idaho Code. I'm here to repeat my argument that bills like this, which exist to persecute our LGBTQ plus community members, does make education worse for everyone. And this does clearly expand the scope of the bill. It was an option. Now it won't be. That's clearly an expansion of scope. Being heterosexual is a sexual orientation, and following established gender roles is part of gender identity. If this bill passes, would a parent be allowed to complain that their student read Romeo and Juliet? Their heterosexual attraction to each other is a core theme of the story that cannot be avoided. In Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, Viola, who's a woman, disguises herself as a man to work for the nobleman Orsino. Upon falling in love, she laments frequently about how she cannot act on these feelings because Orsino believes her to be a man. Many plot points revolve around Viola appearing as a man, but behaving like a woman. To fully discuss this play, gender identity and sexual orientation will need to be touched on. The Shakespeare Company performed this play for our school last year, and it was an incredible experience for myself and my students. I foresee that this bill would put a stop to experiences like that. Parents could use this law to keep social studies programs from teaching how different cultures have different expectations for men or women, or how women's role in the workforce has changed over time. These are all issues tied to gender identity. What about any coming-of-age story that discusses a boy learning the responsibilities of being a man? Do we have to ban Pinocchio, a puppet who wants to be a real boy? None of these topics are salacious or inappropriate for their intended grade-level classes. But if a school district plays it safe to protect itself from this law, I predict that they will be eliminated from instruction. Classic literature and important history could be cut, worsening education for all of us, just to make sure that LGBTQ plus children don't get the opportunity to know that there are others just like them. Please vote no.
That was some of the testimony in the Idaho Senate Education Committee yesterday. Republican Senator Van Bertenshaw of Territon motioned to hold the bill in committee, saying there's enough confusion about the matter to warrant more discussion. The committee then held the bill. The one-week delay in a bill that would cut Medicaid disability payments requested by Republican Lori McCann of Lewiston last week has prompted Republican Representative Jordan Redman of Coeur d'Alene to once again introduce a bill eliminating Medicaid expansion, which 60.6% of Idaho voters passed in 2018. Redman told the House Health and Welfare Committee today, "Are we going to prioritize the most vulnerable way in which Medicaid was originally set up for, or are we going to look to continue with Medicaid expansion?" The Idaho Capital Sun reports ending Medicaid expansion would remove about 90,000 Idahoans from publicly supported health insurance. Here's Representative Redman in an exchange with Democratic Representative Megan Egbert of Boise.
We kind of have come to a consensus. However, their bill is not moving, essentially. And so we've been asking them when that bill is going to move. And so the good chairman asked if I would bring this bill to get something moving. So our thought is hopefully we can send this over to them and then they can act on it.
Follow up.
Follow up. Thank you. Could you clarify maybe what the differences are between RRS and their bill?
Representative Redman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Egbert. The biggest difference is their bill had three members from each chamber, and then also a clause in there for rurality to make sure that there would be rural members. I believe it was two-thirds or half. I was not involved in drafting that, but we did have conversations about it.
Republican Representative John Vanderwood of Nampa asked Redman to bring the repeal bill. Vanderwood told the committee, "We have to decide whether we're going to make our priorities those with disabilities or those without, and this is the only other option I have." Vanderwood told the committee the other bill died. However, the committee's official vote was to hold the bill until March 11th. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP programming is sponsored by listeners like you and by Essential Art Gallery and Fine Gifts at 203 South Main Street in Moscow, showcasing high-quality art, pottery, jewelry, art glass, sculptures, scarves, textiles, wood and metal art, and fine chocolate and gifts from regional, national, and international artists. KRFP is also sponsored by Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739.
Advocates for reproductive care are celebrating a new law that will increase access to medication abortions for Washingtonians. In 2023, the state spent about $1.2 million on a three-year supply of mifepristone and misoprostol, two medications commonly used for abortion and miscarriage care, as a safeguard against legal threats to access. But much of the medication still remains undistributed and is set to expire. Family doctor Zoe Taylor says the new law removes barriers so the medication can be sold for cheaper or donated more easily. She says this will be a big help because the medication can cost patients hundreds of dollars.
There are people every day who can't afford this medication who need it in this country. And there are providers who are trying to stay in the black, but trying to let people pay what they can. And so if we can donate it to those providers too, I mean, this is just such a no-brainer.
Initial rules required the state to sell the medication at list price plus a $5 fee, which was higher than provider rates, hindering distribution. Republican lawmakers argued against the new law, saying the fact that the stockpile of medication is about to expire shows the initial purchase was unnecessary. With Washington seeing more patients from other states seeking reproductive care, Taylor says the Department of Health should sell or donate the medications to mail-order pharmacies as well as clinics. She says this would ease access for both patients and providers.
The more of that we can do by telemedicine or through the mail, the less we make people travel, the less we make people take off work, the less they have to figure out childcare.
She adds more telemedicine means more appointments stay available for Washingtonians who need in-person care. Taylor emphasizes that using medication for early pregnancy loss and termination is safe and common in the first trimester. Medication abortion accounts for nearly 70% of abortions in Washington and costs an average of $600. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
The U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration says it has made the largest drug bust ever in Washington east of the Cascades, with the seizure of 370 pounds of narcotics and $2 million in cash from multiple locations in the Tri-Cities last week on Tuesday. The DEA attributes the seized contraband to Amador Sanchez and co-conspirators, saying Sanchez used several homes throughout the Tri-Cities to facilitate his drug trafficking activities. Law enforcement says they seized over 200 pounds of methamphetamine, 164 pounds of powdered fentanyl, and over 5 pounds of cocaine, plus the $2 million and 16 guns. First Assistant U.S. Attorney Pete Serrano wrote in a news release, "This momentous drug seizure reflects the tireless work of our law enforcement partners to protect our communities. The enormous quantities of fentanyl and methamphetamine seized in this case had the potential to cause devastating harm across our region. Our office is committed to aggressively prosecuting those who traffic deadly drugs, especially repeat offenders who continue to endanger public safety." The spokesman review reports in 2013, a judge sentenced Sanchez to 15 years in prison for 2 counts of possession of methamphetamine with intent to distribute. He was out on probation as of last year when police arrested him for using drugs and alcohol in violation of his probation conditions. On Thursday, a judge ordered Sanchez held in jail. DEA Special Agent in charge of the Seattle Field Division, Robert Ciccone, said the extraordinary amounts of fentanyl and methamphetamine removed from the Tri-Cities area would have devastated families and communities. Through strong enforcement strategic partnerships and increased public awareness, DEA remains unwavering in its commitment to disrupt the fentanyl supply chain and save American lives. King County prosecutors have charged 33 pro-Palestinian protesters with first-degree criminal trespass for occupying a University of Washington engineering building in Seattle in May 2025. The protesters were calling for the university to sever their ties with Boeing, which has supplied aircraft to the Israeli military, which has killed tens of thousands of civilians in Gaza. University of Washington spokesperson Victor Balta said, "We value free speech and expression, but also must continue to be a campus community where dangerous, unlawful actions are not tolerated." Court documents say the group of protesters entered the building at about 5 p.m. on May 5, 2025. State troopers and Seattle police tried to negotiate, and after 2 dispersal orders, officers wearing riot gear entered the building and placed the protesters in hand restraints. Police referred felony first-degree malicious mischief and second-degree burglary charges to the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, but the charges became misdemeanors when University of Washington police investigators determined there was not enough evidence and instead charged the group with misdemeanor trespassing. All 33 are expected to be arraigned on Wednesday, March 25th.
When the pandemic forced many organizations to pivot to online meetings and events, AARP Wyoming asked its members what they wanted to stay active and socially engaged. Since then, the state's largest advocacy group for people aged 50 and older has created a virtual event center that offers everything from line dancing and yoga to photography and art classes. Outreach Director Jennifer Beyer says on Fridays throughout March and April, they're offering For the Birds, from backyard to binoculars, where participants will learn how to spot, identify, and track wild bird populations.
There are all sorts of cool websites where you can track bird migration, and there are apps that you can use to listen to bird songs and identify birds while you're walking.
There are also in-person birding field trips planned for Cheyenne, Laramie, and Sheridan in partnership with the Audubon Society. Beyer says 99% of all events are free of charge, and you don't have to be 50 years or older to participate. All of the Zoom events are also recorded and available on demand. For a complete list of events, visit aarp.org/wyevents. At first, Bayer had to recruit folks to conduct classes, but now experts from a variety of fields are contacting her with proposals. Laramie artist Lynn Jones teaches an art class on Tuesdays and Thursdays that blends colored pencils, watercolor, textured papers, wood, glass, and natural elements. Bayer says one of the many great things about Lynn is that she's frugal.
She always gives us options on, like, you don't need to spend hundreds of dollars. You can just grab this or that or the other thing. And we appreciate that because art can get expensive pretty quickly.
In addition to all of the fun and creativity, she says classes can help folks maintain good brain health and reduce stress and social isolation. Bayer says she's especially excited about two Saturday classes planned for this month.
We're all going to try ballet for the first time ever. And we've also got a world-renowned iPhone photographer who's going to teach us all the ins and outs of using our iPhones for photography.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, 60% chance of snow tonight, mainly between 8 p.m. and 2 a.m., increasing clouds, low 29, west winds 10, becoming south in the evening, gusts up to 20, nighttime snow accumulation less than 1 inch. Tomorrow, 90% chance of precipitation, rain and snow becoming all rain after 2 p.m., snow level rising to 4,300 feet in the afternoon, high 43, southwest winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 30, new snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. 100% chance of rain Wednesday night, snow level 5,300 feet, steady temperature around 43, very windy with southwest winds 20 to 25, increasing to 30 to 35 after midnight with gusts up to 50 miles per hour, up to a quarter inch of rain possible. On Thursday, 90% chance of precipitation, rain before noon, then rain possibly mixed with snow. Snow level 4,900 feet, lowering to 2,900 feet, high 45, very windy, west winds 35 to 40, decreasing to 20 to 25 in the afternoon, gusts up to 55 miles per hour. Little or no snow accumulation expected. The National Weather Service has issued a high wind warning for central and eastern Washington and north central and northern Idaho for 8 p.m. Wednesday until 11 a.m. on Thursday. Southwest winds 30 to 45 with gusts up to 65 miles per hour expected in the region. Damaging winds will blow down trees and power lines. Widespread power outages are expected. Travel will be difficult, especially for high-profile vehicles. Patchy blowing dust will be possible in the Columbia Basin around Moses Lake. Remain in the lower levels of your home during the windstorm and avoid windows. Watch for falling debris and tree limbs. Use caution if you must drive. The current temperature is 37 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ, there's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Flashpoints is up next. That'll be followed by Rude Awakening live in the studio, 7:30 to 9:30 tonight. Brent Bent brings music in earnest, 9:30 to 11 with the Brent Bent Show. At 11 o'clock, the Sons of Patriarchy podcast will be on the air, so stay tuned for that. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Friends of the Clearwater, a 501c3 environmental nonprofit dedicated to protecting your public lands. FOC is defending the wildlands, wildlife, and waterways of North Central Idaho for future generations. Friendsoftheclearwater.org.